All right, go ahead and open up to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. You know, in a, what I say, a past life, I was a musician, but before that, I dabbled in some sports, football and wrestling, that sort of thing. And you know, this past week I was thinking about, I wish that I was at the place now that I was when I was wrestling in 8th, 9th, 10th grade, where, now listen, I've always been a little bigger, you know, but at least then, that I had some reason for that, because I was a big, mean wrestler, and I was a center for the football team, and I could run a couple miles without questioning. Now, I can't do that so well. I still can keep up, but I can't do it like I used to be able to. You know, atrophy doesn't happen overnight. It's taken a long time for me to forget how to wrestle. Now, if you ask me how to wrestle, listen, you're probably going to beat me. I was okay, but you're probably going to beat me. It takes a long time to forget how to do those things. The other day, I picked up my trumpet for the first time in about 6 months or so, because I've gotten it in my head that I'm going to start playing again. And I picked it up, and I just started playing like I used to. And I played Georgia On My Mind. And by the time I got done, I couldn't play anymore. Atrophy happens over an extended amount of time. And the book of Ecclesiastes is a book that is essentially saying, I tried everything, and all it did was take me farther away from God. Solomon writes the book of Ecclesiastes, and probably somewhere close to the end of his life, maybe not the last part of his life, but at least after he has been through a life that has been led by trying to search after what he wanted to do. If you read 1 Kings chapter 11, you're going to see Solomon in the worst place he ever could possibly be. Now, this is Solomon, the son of David, right? The man after God's own heart. There is no way that you can tell me that Solomon was not taught to follow God. His father made some mistakes. Of course he did. Every person that's a man after God's own heart is going to make some mistakes at one point or another. David made mistakes. But the fact of the matter is, David was a godly man that sought to fix his wrongs when he realized his wrongs. And he sought to follow God to the point that even he wanted to build the temple, but God wouldn't let him. He said, you're a man of war, and so you're going to have to get everything ready so that when Solomon comes, your son, and he becomes old enough, he can take care of building my temple, because I don't want a man of war, a man with blood on his hands, to build my temple. And so Solomon was raised for the purpose of building the temple of God. And David got everything ready, and Solomon takes power. In 1 Kings 11, you see a man that is overcome with sin. He had 700 wives, 300 concubines. Those wives and concubines took him away from God to the point that he starts worshiping idols and he starts following after the ways of the world. And eventually, Solomon is very far from where he became, where he came from. That doesn't happen overnight. My forgetting how to play trumpet over the last, how long has it been since I was in college? 8, 9 years? My forgetting how to play the trumpet the way I used to play didn't happen overnight. You're not going to come from being faithful today and being a faithful child of God, a strong person that has a faith that is built on the bedrock of Jesus Christ, like Matthew chapter 16 that Peter had. You're not going to go from that to where Solomon is in 1 Kings chapter 11 overnight. But given enough time and given enough lack of care toward your faith and toward your soul, you will end up there. Ecclesiastes. I don't know why I had 1 Corinthians stuck in my head this morning. Because we're studying that Bible class, and I heard a little bitty bit of Bible class, And so it just sticking in my head.
Ecclesiastes 1, 2, 3, and really the whole book is about Solomon's search for satisfaction, for happiness.
Now, he's not searching for salvation necessarily like we are today. He's searching for satisfaction. He just wants to be a satisfied follower of God. And we're going to look at the first three chapters and see some of the things that attributed to Solomon's place in 1 Kings chapter 11. Where did he come from? What did he go through? What did he allow himself to follow that got him to the point where he has so many wives and concubines that he has allowed himself to be pulled away from the one thing that he was built to do, as it were? He was born to be a king of Israel. He was born to be the man that built the temple of God that would be used until AD 70. Theoretically. Now, we know that it was destroyed eventually because Israel kept going into idolatry. So eventually Israel had to be wiped off the planet and be taken into captivity. And that's why we have the books of Daniel and Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, and so on. And so, what got him there? It's not just one thing. His atrophy wasn't just one thing. And I am willing to say that those of us here this morning that are weak in our faith, it's not just one reason. Those of us that have left the church, left the faith, it's not just because one reason. If I sit down with someone that has left the body of Christ and is now living the way they want to in the world, and I say, what happened? Chances are they're going to give me one reason. But when you dig deeper, it's never just one reason. It's always a slow progression that takes them farther and farther away from God. Because they aren't working at it. You know, back in the day, I worked really hard to be mediocre at wrestling. They used to run us so much that I thought I would forget how to sweat. I had to work really hard to be mediocre. But given enough time, I don't remember anything. I used to work really hard to play the trumpet. I used to practice for hours on end during the day. And I'd go to class in college, and I'd go and I'd sit in this little bitty room by myself between classes, and I would practice all day long. And given 8 years, I can't play a common song anymore. You see, it's not just one thing. It's enough time and enough lack of care and enough temptations and getting in this one time that got Solomon where he is in 1 Kings, there we go again, chapter 11. So Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Solomon started looking after pursuits. He started going after things that were empty. Now, keep in mind that asking questions and looking around us is not sinful. However, that's not what Solomon did. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse number 12. Ecclesiastes 1, verse 12. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of men by which they may be exercised. Solomon said, I was trying to do exactly what God told me to do. Ask questions, look around me, and make sure that I'm right. 1 Thessalonians says that we need to prove or test everything. When we look around us, that's not wrong. When we understand the ways of the world, it's not wrong. It's a good thing. It allows us to fight those things. And asking questions is never wrong. Sometimes our kids will ask a question and we try to hush them because you just don't ask. No, it's good. Ask that question. Let's try to figure out how we can rationalize these things. Is it even possible to rationalize these things? Well, no, it's not. Okay, good. That's great. You see, asking questions isn't the problem. That's what Ecclesiastes starts out with. I, the preacher, the king of Israel, I was going to look around me and make sure that what I was doing was correct. But I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be numbered. He said, I wanted to look around me and make sure that what I was doing was right. But then I realized, given enough time,
And looking back, hindsight's 20/20, this is a man that is older in life, that's looking back on his life, and he's saying, I thought that if I walked a mile in their shoes, I would understand. That's different than understanding the world around us. Solomon didn't just ask questions. He jumped in head first. And it caused him to have some very serious problems with temptations. Number one, he was looking for education in all the wrong places. Chapter 1, verse 16. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart was understood, or has understood, great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom and to know much madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind, for in much wisdom is much great. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Solomon said, well, you've got to sow your wild oats in order to know what's right and wrong, right? You've got to be there before you can tell someone else that they're wrong. There's a problem with that, and that is, I don't have to take strychnine to know that it's bad for me. I don't have to go to college for 18 years in order to get a medical degree to know that eating too many Whoppers is bad for me, right? I don't have to know those things. I don't have to walk in those shoes. I don't have to do heroin in order to know that heroin will ruin your life. But that's what we say sometimes, isn't it? Our kids grow up and we say, well, you know, they just got to sow their wild oats. Don't come back. They may. But you see, Solomon was raised by a man after God's own heart. And luckily, he came back. But it doesn't happen that way all the time. You see, this idea that you have to walk a mile in someone's shoes before you can understand what they go through is a great in concept and great in theory, but it's very bad in practicality. You just can't do it. You can't walk a mile in the world's shoes and hope that it's going to do anything but lead you exactly where it leads them. If I were to say, well, next week I'm going to preach on heroin, so I'm going to go down to the bad parts of Columbus, and I'm going to buy heroin, and I'm going to take it this week just so I know how to preach against it. You probably wouldn't say that was a good thing, would you? Probably wouldn't want your preacher going and taking heroin in order to know how to preach against it next week. Well, I think it goes the same way. And Solomon has just said that. I wanted to search these things out. He didn't just ask the question. Notice there again, in verse number 16, he says, I set my heart to look for these things. He wasn't just asking questions about the things that are around him. He said, I'm going to jump in head first. And I'm going to see where this takes me. Maybe this will give me satisfaction. And it wouldn't. He says, in much education, in much wisdom, in much knowledge brings much grief. Because eventually you're going to have a problem. And it happens in chapter 2, verse number 12. He addresses this problem that he faced. You see, Solomon, again, born by a man after God's own heart, raised in order to build the temple of God, a man that was taught in all of the Old Testament writings up to that point. There is no question in my mind that if Solomon were living right now, David would have taken him to every single Bible class on Sundays and Wednesdays and every single youth rally around him, and he would have him doing all sorts of things in the worship of the church. They didn't have the church back then, but you understand what I'm saying here? He was inundated with the truth of God. Chapter 2, verse 12. Then I turned myself to consider wonder or wisdom and madness and folly. But what can a man do who succeeds the king? Only what he's already done. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. You don't really understand how dark it is until it becomes light, do you? Right now I'm reading a book about the USS Indianapolis that was sank in World War II after it delivered the little boy from Hawaii to Guam. It set off from Guam and it was going to another island. It was sank. This morning I got to the point where they're floating in a raft. The captain of the ship, the USS Indianapolis, is floating in a raft. And it said that it was so dark that he couldn't even see the people sitting next to him. And when the sharks would bump the bottom of the raft, they thought it was a swimmer. And so they would start asking who was there, and they'd try to get the swimmer out of the water.
come to find out it's a mako shark that's trying to eat them. Because they couldn't see the hand in front of their face. That's what Solomon says. He says, wisdom just points out problems. Light points out darkness. If I were to turn off all these lights right now, you'd be able to see a little bit from the lights that's coming in around the doors and through the top window and whatnot. But the fact of the matter is you don't realize just how dark it is until you finally see the light again. Have y'all ever had that instance where, I know you do because you live in 2016, where you wake up in the morning and you have to check your Facebook or your Twitter or Instagram or email, whatever you check in the morning. You know what it's like, right? You roll over, your eyes open immediately. You roll over and you've got to get your fix of your addiction to your phone. So you hit the button to see who contacted you through the night. How many Instagram likes did I get that last night? Did anybody send me a Facebook message or a text message? And you know the feeling when that light finally turns on and your eyes feel like they're going to explode out of your head? It's basically what Solomon says. I had a problem. I knew the truth, but I dove so far into the darkness that the light was hurting my eyes. Because eventually, you're going to have to play so many mind games, so many mental gymnastics, because you know the truth. Solomon knew the truth. But now he's in so much darkness that the light is hurting his mind. It's hurting his eyes. He can't see anymore because now he's got a problem. And the problem is, on one hand, he knows what God wants him to do. And on the other hand, he's got to figure out how to rationalize doing what he wants to do. And eventually, he did exactly what all of us are going to do. He's going to take the easy road out. Billy and I were talking last week and during the day, and I said, now, Billy, I have a question for you. He said, okay. I said, can you name a false doctrine or a false practice or a sinful action that makes Christianity harder for someone to follow? You know, all these false doctrines of, well, you don't have to be baptized in order to be saved, or you can use mechanical instruments, or you can do this, or you can do that. All these false teachings that are out there in the world because there's 38,000 different religious groups claiming Christianity today. Can you think of a time where something that they're teaching that's false makes it harder for them to follow Christianity? And he said, well, no, I can't. He said, I can't either. That's a problem. Because you see, Solomon did just that. He took the easy way out. There is no falsehood. There is no sin. There is nothing worldly out there that is going to make it harder for you to live a Christian life. They all make it easy. They all rationalize. They all make example or excuses. They say, well, you don't have to do this. Because listen, you come to services every single Sunday morning. You don't have to go to the Bible class. You don't have to go to Sunday afternoon worship. You come every single morning. I mean, let's face it, you're relatively faithful in your attendance. Solomon was relatively faithful in his. Problem was he wasn't ready for what he was going to do when he got older. When he got older, he started asking questions, and he dove in head first. And then he realizes, I've got to give one of these up. Now I can give the easy way up, and I can go, and I can take following God, which is pretty difficult, and I can make that my life, or I can take the easy road and just follow whatever I want. And eventually, he gave in and he started following whatever he wanted. You see, when we start asking questions, it's good. But when we jump too far in and we start rationalizing what we're doing, you're going to come to a point where your conscience is asking questions of your actions, and they just don't match up. And eventually, your conscience is going to stop. And you're not going to have problems with that thing anymore. You think Solomon had a problem with idolatry when he was growing up? Think about it. David, his father, is teaching him and getting him ready to build the temple of God. You think Solomon went over the passages like we went over in the teen class this morning with God is a jealous God. He doesn't want his people to follow all these other worldly idols that are just pieces of sticks and rocks that have been turned into human figures or animal figures, and that they say that that's their God. You think Solomon knew that God didn't want him to follow those things? Yeah, of course he did.
Problem is, he started making excuses, and eventually his wives took him there.
You see, his atrophy didn't happen overnight. It took a long time for Solomon to get to where he was.
And Ecclesiastes is him saying, I tried all this, and it's not good. It's empty. It's vain. It's trivial. It's pointless.
Going after these things, like, for instance, chapter 2. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 1. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Mirth is a word for pleasure or happiness. It's for excess. Okay,
so, in essence, he's saying, I'm going to try this satisfaction from having fun. I'm going to go everywhere I want to go. I'm going to do everything I want to do because I'm one of the richest men alive. I'm the king of Israel, after all. I'm going to do whatever I want to do, and I'm going to see that if I can be satisfied by pleasure, by happiness, if I can make myself happy through all the ways of the world. And so he says, I'm going to do this. I'm going to set my heart on mirth and enjoy pleasure. But surely this also was vanity. I said of laughter and madness and of mirth, what does it accomplish? He says, having fun and having pleasure doesn't accomplish anything when it really boils down to what my life means on this earth. Billy mentioned that a lot of people today just want to go around and find themselves. Last week during the gospel meeting, he said people just want to go find themselves today. They want to go and they want to walk around America. They want to go to Ecuador. They want to go to some other country, and they just want to find themselves. Well, that's great. It's good to know who you are, but you don't have to go to Peru in order to find yourself. It's not going to make you happy. What's truly going to make you happy is living a life that is worthy of the name of God. And he says, I tried to make myself happy, and all I realized was it's pointless. I tried to find satisfaction in pleasure. I tried to find satisfaction in happiness, and I just couldn't do it because laughter is fun, but it's madness when it comes to following God. What does it matter if you have fun and you laugh a lot if your eternity means that you're away from God? So he says, I went after these things. I searched my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart in wisdom, how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. I just wanted to find what my purpose in life is. I just wanted to go and be happy for a little while and just find myself and see if I could find satisfaction in all of this, because being the king of Israel is a pretty tough job, I imagine. And eventually, well, you know how it is. Your job is pretty tough. You got to work at it pretty hard. You don't really get the credit. You don't really get the approval that you think you deserve, and so eventually you say, well, that's enough. I'm just gonna make myself happy. Just gonna try to make this as best as I can. That's what Solomon said. He said it's pointless because I needed to look for the right thing. And so eventually he moves on in chapter 2, verse number 4, and he says, well, I couldn't just do it with laughter and with having fun. And so I thought, money, that's where it is. You know, I saw a thing online the other day that said money doesn't buy happiness, but it buys guns, and guns mean happiness. That's because he likes shooting guns. Plug in anything that you like. Money doesn't buy happiness, but it buys cars, and I like fancy cars, and cars bring happiness to me. Money doesn't buy happiness, but X does, and so I'm just going to buy all these things and see if it means satisfaction. Look at verse number 4 of chapter 2. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 4. I made my works great, built myself houses, planted myself vineyards. By the way, okay, today we say, I'm going to get a really nice house, right? Solomon says, I'm going to get really nice houses. Wouldn't that be nice? Except, remember what he's saying here, that all of my houses didn't have it. And in fact, in Song of Solomon, his bride says that his houses were
beamed with the trees of Lebanon, the cedars of Lebanon, the nicest, fanciest houses that you can buy during that time. And it's pointless. Built myself houses and built vineyards. Made myself gardens and orchards. I planted all kinds of trees and fruit in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants. And I even had servants built born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. Also, I gathered for myself silver and gold and all the special treasures of kings and all of all the provinces. I acquired male and female singers and delights of the sons of men and musical instruments of all kinds. I went to all kinds of concerts. I bought nice houses and nice cars. I had servants. I had so many servants that you wouldn't even imagine how well my life was. I didn't have to lift a finger. I had one guy that's whole job was just to feed me grapes the whole day. I don't know if that's true, but I have a feeling that that's probably true. Okay, so I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained in me. God was still on my side. At least he thought he was. Isn't it interesting that sometimes when we're doing something that's wrong, we will rationalize and say, well, God's still blessing me, so it's got to be okay. The Jews had the opposite idea. In Luke chapter 13, Jesus says, do you think that the people that had natural disasters happen to them had somehow made God upset? You need to repent of that. You need to change your mind of that, or you're also going to perish in a different way. That's what Luke 13:3 is saying. Don't think that people that have natural disasters have somehow sinned against God, and that's why God's punishing them. Good things happen to bad people, and bad things happen to good people. And I've been there before, too. My faith is sort of weak, but hey, listen, God's still on my side, so I must be doing something right. Well, maybe God isn't on your side. Maybe you're just still reaping the benefits of when he was. That's what Solomon is doing. He says, my wisdom is also still with me. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. But, look down at the end, verse number 11. And indeed, all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. There's all these nice things I bought myself. You know, I tried just being happy and laughing a lot to make myself satisfied, but it didn't work. And so I started buying things, and it didn't work either. I had a real life example of this past week. You know, I have a pretty nice computer, MacBook. It's pretty nice. It does pretty much everything I ever wanted to do, and then some. I don't really know how to use it, but it's pretty good. It's pretty good. This past week, it decided I'm not going to be so good anymore, and I'm just going to stop working. That's great. Possessions will always let you down. Every time. He says, I bought all these nice houses. I had all these servants. I had all this stuff. And eventually I realized that stuff breaks. It's not so fun when your stuff breaks. When your computer dies, well, it didn't really die. It just stopped working. I got it fixed now. It's working just fine now. But when stuff breaks, you really see that this really wasn't adding anything to my life other than just making me think that I had it pretty good. And that's what happened to Solomon. He said, it's all vanity and grasping for the wind. Okay, so I'm not going to give in to these thoughts. And I'm not going to give in to my pleasures anymore. But what I'm going to do is I'm just going to set my life to working so that I can make a better life for my children and for the people that come after me. Doesn't that sound amazing? Doesn't that sound great? Listen, you can't make it very well in this life because there's always going to be troubles. I mean, that's just the fact of the matter. You're always going to have troubles in this life. One reason or another. Your stuff is going to break, or you're going to lose a job. Something's going to happen. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to set my mind on just making sure that I make a better life for my sons. That's what Solomon did. Look at chapter 2, verse 18. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 18. Then I hated all my labor, which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. He said, I got all this stuff and I realized that the stuff isn't going to make me happy. And then I thought, now I've got all this stuff. What's going to happen after I die? What, are they going to take care of my stuff? I don't know if they are or not. We do that. You say, I'm going to put my heart in just making sure that I can provide for my kids and that they have a good life when I leave this earth. And I'm going to leave them a lot of inheritance. And I'm going to make sure that they never have to worry anymore. He says, and then I realized, well, what if they don't take care of it? What if they're crazy? What if they're a fool? What if they just throw away all my hard work? Solomon's life at this point is pretty sad, isn't it? I started questioning things around me and I got too far. I went too far deep and I realized that I was lost. And then I started finding my way back, and so I started trying to have laughter, and it didn't work. And I tried to buy things, and it didn't work. And then I got all this stuff, and I realized eventually I'm going to die. And what's this stuff going to help me? It's all vanity. It's the whole book. The word vanity or emptiness is used in Ecclesiastes 33 times. 33 times. That means, essentially, all he's saying in this book is, I tried this and it didn't work. 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 Now, turn to the end of the book. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. I think you know where I'm going with this. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole of man, the whole duty, the whole assignment, the whole reason of man, depending on how your translation says. Essentially, Solomon wraps it up by saying this: it didn't help me one bit. I tried all this stuff. I tried physical pleasures, mental pleasures. I tried money. I tried wives. I tried making my kingdom as strong as it could possibly be. And none of it worked. And I finally realized that my entire purpose on this earth was not for satisfaction. It was for salvation. And so, he says, the whole purpose for your existence is to fear God and keep his commandments. Now let's think about this. Let's wrap this up. What does this have to do with us? Well, I think there's pretty good application throughout this whole thing, but I want to point out a couple things. Education isn't everything. Because I wanted to learn. I just wanted to learn how the world works. That's great. Education is wonderful. On both sides. Number one, to learn about sin and to learn how it comes up. I was talking with Billy again last week, and I said, you know, there's something interesting about sin. It's the same throughout time. Billy said, yeah, but the difference is just how we use that sin, how it affects us. You know, we can look out this world, we can see all these sinful things, and we can see these ungodly things that aren't going to add anything to our lives. And we can say, well, I want that. Well, it's not going to help anything. Education on one side, spiritual education, is great. It teaches us about the church. It teaches us about the truth. And it teaches us, by implication, about error. But also, let's take that to the other extreme, to the secular side. What's it going to matter if we go to school for X number of years and we get our doctorate in spaceness? I don't really know what doctorates come in. Listen, I'm a preacher. Anyway, we get our doctorate in physics. What's that going to help us when we get to heaven? We get to the judgment day. Education is great. One way, it helps us to see the world. The other way, it helps us to make sure that we have, that we can help and we can be productive. But the fact of the matter is, Solomon said, I wanted to learn, and what I learned was that learning isn't everything. Number two, pleasures. I think this is pretty cut and dry. We can pretty much attest to the fact that our stuff is basically pointless. You know, they used to tell me, in preaching school, they used to say, an illustration, they'd say, you can't take it with you. I've never seen a U-Haul trailer behind a hearse. And then one day while they were teaching us how to do a funeral, they took us to the funeral home as a kind of a class trip, field trip, if you will, with a bunch of preachers that are all adults. But anyway, it was an adult field trip. We went to the funeral home, and they're walking us through the casket area, right? Jim knows what I'm talking about. The area that they show all the caskets, and they show this one costs way too much money, and this one costs way too much money, and this one costs even more way too much money. And I looked over, and I saw a casket that had a little drawer that pulled out above the person's head with me. I said, "What's that drawer for?" And he said, "Oh, that's so you can put mementos and like wedding rings and things in there to be buried with." And I looked at my instructor and I said, "May not have seen you all, but they got a shelf in this one. You can't take it with you. Even if you bury it with you, doesn't mean anything. You know, the pharaohs of Egypt used to bury all sorts of things with them. And you know what happened to that? We broke it into it all. Because they didn't take it with them. And so now we have golden dolls. Because why not?" Anyway, so you can't take it with you. Your pleasures can't. Education can't get you to heaven unless it's the education and application of the truth. Pleasures can't get you to heaven unless they somehow help you get to be closer to God. The problem is, a lot of physical pleasures take you farther away from God on every single account. Well, what about providing? What about work? Work is great. You know, 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says that if you don't work, you shouldn't eat. A person that's not willing to work, I'm not talking about the people that can't work. I'm talking about the people that won't work. They're just too lazy. They're too worthless to work and to take care of their families. They shouldn't eat. What 2 Thessalonians 3 says. But it doesn't really matter when it comes to the end whether or not you work. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that they know someone or that they themselves wish that they had worked harder in their careers. Especially New Testament Christians. On their deathbed, what they say is, "I wish I had followed God even closer. I wish I had put my mind on Christ more." And Solomon is doing that in chapters 1, 2, and 3. He's saying, "I tried all this stuff and it didn't work. And I realized," chapter 12, "all I wanted to do, all I needed to do, my whole purpose in life was just to follow God." Let me ask you a question. What would it take for you to give up your faith? Pretty simple question, right? Pretty difficult answer, though. What would it take for you to give up your faith? You know, there are some people that give up their faith for their jobs. They say, "Well, I've got to work. I can't do that. I got to work. I can't. I got way too much stuff on my plate right now." Well, that's great. Time to empty that plate off. You know, when I was growing up, it was Thanksgiving time. It was this Thanksgiving, and my grandma would always have a big to-do on the counter of all sorts of things. She cooked a ham and a turkey for no reason. Right? She cooked two different kinds of cornbread dressing for no reason, I guess. And I would get all the way to the end and I'd have my plate all full and I'd see that there was green stuff. Do you know what green stuff is? It's pistachio something. I think it's called Waldorf. I don't know. We call it green stuff. It's pistachios and pecans. Yeah, I said pecans. And marshmallows and that sort of stuff. It's all mixed in with pineapple. You know what I'm talking about, right? It's like, if angels eat real food, this is what they eat. And so I would go back through the line, and I'd take the ham off the plate, and I'd put it back, and I'd go to the end, and I'd get the green stuff, and I'd eat all the green stuff. Dad would get mad because I ate half of the green stuff and no actual food. Well, that's kind of what we do here on Earth. We say, "I want all this stuff." And then right when we get to the end, we say, "I wish I had saved room for this." Problem is, you can't go back and pick a ham in that illustration. Nobody wants ham when you got green stuff at the end of the line. Let me ask you a question. What would it take for you to give up your faith? What has it taken you to give up your faith? I have a feeling some of us are right there right now. If you need to make something right, maybe you're a non-Christian. Maybe you're not a Christian yet and you want to become one. We're going to sing an invitation song. That's so that you can think about it. And if you're willing to be baptized with the remission of your sins, then that's when you tell us about it. Maybe you're a Christian and you have given up your faith. Maybe you've asked questions, which is good, but you've also given into those questions. Maybe you've put other things in front of God. Maybe you have tried to find pleasure in everything else. You've tried to find satisfaction. You realize that I don't need satisfaction. I just need salvation. Whatever it is, we're going to stand. Gary's going to lead us in a song of encouragement. And just meet me down here while we do that.